17 past six, this is 4BC and Greg Carey. A few times this week, I'll talk to my friend TJ O'Hara, who I've known for many, many years. TJ ran as an independent for the presidency in the United States back in 2012. He's a much respected commentator in the United States and elsewhere. And his insight into what's going on there, I think, will maybe help us all understand the craziness of what we hear about over there at the moment. TJ, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. Just picking up from where we left off yesterday, we were talking about the likelihood of it being Donald Trump versus Joe Biden again, although much can happen. It's still early days. But we've still got Donald Trump about to face all these indictments. He's going to be going to court. For those of us, you know, who are roughly following what's going on, can you tell us what the most serious of these charges is? And is there really any chance of him actually going to prison?
Well, it's difficult to say which one is more difficult. There are four cases, two of which are federal, one in District of Columbia, one in Florida, two in the states, one in Georgia, one in New York, 91 felony counts, so pick your poison, 234 and a half years maximum sentence if it's imposed consecutively, which will never happen. The federal cases are more interesting with respect to precedent because they impact the entire country. The states are limited to a state impact. But the state cases are interesting because they're more immune to a Trump presidency. He has no executive control over their attorneys general or the states themselves. I would say if you had to rank them, probably the most important case would be the one in D.C. He has four felony counts in 55 years. I would say the second is probably the Georgia case, and that will get the most media attention because they've done a shotgun approach where they've charged everybody other than you and me. And so the media is going to, you know, be a feeding frenzy because of a lot of big names associated with it.
And you're still a chance.
13 felony counts.
Yeah.
Yeah, 13 felony counts, 55 and a half years. I would say the third, but absolutely the strongest case where he has the most legal challenge would be the Florida case, which is a federal one, 40 felony counts, 120 years. That one has actual evidence and direct evidence, and it has law that's been applied in the past. These other cases have a lot of novel instances, and you can throw the one in New York out, 34 felony counts, 4 years total sentencing, and it's falsifying business records.
Okay.
And if you're successful on that, look for that to be a model for indictments going against the Biden family business practices.
Okay, TJ, so some of those clearly very serious. If found guilty on any of these, is there really a prospect of a former president and a contender for the presidency again going to jail?
There's a chance of that, particularly in the state cases. The problem is, again, setting precedents. Venues make a big difference, as do judges. D.C. and Fulton County, they could have probably charged Trump with the assassination of President Lincoln, and he probably would get convicted. You know, Georgia is particularly important if he were to become president because it is a state and he can't manipulate that. New York, as I say, was kind of a throwaway. So those venues are important. The judges are also important. The D.C. district judge, who has probably the most important case from a precedent standpoint, been the toughest sentencer in the January 6th conviction, some would say punitive. Converse to that, the other federal case, the district judge for the Southern District, is a Trump appointee and has been judged as being lenient in her rulings. But ultimately, these are probably going to go to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
As far as even if he was convicted and possibly even if he was jailed, he wouldn't necessarily be disqualified from running or taking office because the adversaries are arguing that there's an obscure section in the 14th Amendment that bars individuals who have been engaged in insurrection or rebellion from holding office. But unfortunately for them, Trump has not been charged with insurrection or rebellion in any of the four cases.
Okay, so it gets a little bit complex. Talk to TJ O'Hara. It's 22 past 6. This is 4BC. If for any reason Donald Trump doesn't run, and he's way ahead of all the other candidates on the GOP side at the moment, who would be most likely in his absence to get the nomination?
I think there are a number of candidates that would have a shot. I'd say Senator Tim Scott and former governor and Ambassador Nikki Haley are difficult targets for the identity-driven Democrats to attack because of minority status and Nikki Haley being a female. Governor DeSantis is ahead of them right now. He's competent, but he's executed a flawed strategy trying to lure Trump supporters by being more conservative on social issues than Trump himself. Beyond those three, I'd say Vivek Ramaswamy is probably the most gifted speaker of the group and a rallying point for the young, but that's a problem. He's 38, he lacks experience, and that's going to be a concern. Vice President Mike Pence, not even sure why he's running. He tends to be uninspiring and inevitably tied to Trump. You've got former Governor Chris Christie, who's bombastic and articulate, but he's tied to hugging President Obama after Hurricane Sandy and helping him win that election and also sucking up to Trump, to be quite honest. In 2020, when Trump became the obvious nominee and then he abandoned and vilified him afterward. You've got others like Governor Burgum and you've Governor Asa, former Governor Asa Hutchinson, who has a deep background, is a federal prosecutor under Reagan, three-time congressman, drug czar and undersecretary of Homeland Security under George W. Bush. They have a lot of talent, but they don't have name recognition.
TJ, we're nearly out of time. Sorry, TJ, we've only got about a minute left. I did want to ask you about that man. It'll be a new name for many listening in Australia, and that's Vivek Ramaswamy. As you say, 38 years of age, made a fortune as a tech entrepreneur, very intelligent guy. What do we know about him, and is he any chance in the world?
I won't say he has no chance. I mean, you know, one of his bright points is he went to the same high school that I did. So, you know, he's obviously...
Oh, he's up there. He's in good company.
Honestly, he's very bright. He's got a tremendous personality. He's very engaging. I simply think his big challenge is that he's 38 years old. And what you think you know at 38 versus what you've learned by 55 are two different things.
Very different.
Yeah. I think it'll be difficult for a majority of people to shift to him. But he'd certainly carry the young vote, and he's a VP candidate, potentially.
All right. Hey, TJ, great insight, as always. We'll do it again Thursday morning, okay?
Sounds terrific.
Good on you, mate. Have a great day over there. TJ O'Hara from the United States this morning.